Welcome to the In The Tank podcast. Get ready for an hour of hot 40K goodness coming in your ears. You're in the tank now, baby.
We're live.
We are indeed live. Hello there, mate. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm very good. Welcome to In The Tank episode 2. Well, episode 2 already.
God, and it only took me a week to edit the last one.
To be fair, you did very well, considering you had to battle with my gargantuan laugh.
Yeah, it wasn't the best. We had some clipping issues, and you sounded like you were talking through a drain pipe for most of it, but we got it through there. We got it.
Oh, mate, it's all good. It's all good. How have you been, mate? Have you had a good week?
Yeah, been great fun, yeah. Just had family over, so I haven't had much time for hobbying and stuff, but it's been good.
I was going to actually ask you, have you actually done any hobbying this week?
I've done a tiny sneaky bit here and there, but not very much, unfortunately. What about yourself? What have you been working on?
I've been working on, well, I did a glory shot of my, because I've sorted out my miniatures cabinet now, and I did like a really funky, cool, like glory shot of that. So I put all my Terminators away that I was working on, and then I get a little bit like detracted, and I'm like, oh, shiny thing. And I was like, fuck, I really need to finish Azrael. So I got like Azrael out, and I'm determined to finish him because he's just a pain in the ass to paint. He's got so much detail on him and his banner and stuff. And I've done this cool faded. I think I've mastered the art of like color fading now between two colors. So that was cool. So yeah, I mean, I spammed you like pictures in the week where I was like, look at this. Oh,
it's the creamiest wet blend I've ever seen.
Oh wow! Oh my god! Thank you. I've never tried that before. That took me half an hour. So
it's money.
That.
Yeah, we'll bang a shot on the now set up Instagram.
This is true. Oh my god! Yeah. I'm getting there now. Wow,
we're actually doing
pro.
Things.
And we've got like video for this, hopefully.
Not for this one, I don't think, but we'll have it for the next one.
Okay, so, well, that's fair enough.
Yeah, one step at a time.
Okay,
it's not rushed.
So awesome. We have some topics for today then, lad.
Brilliant.
So
lead on.
You're in a tournament or you're playing against your friends and you get paired up with someone and it says the army that you dread to face in events and stuff. What is that army, mate? What is the army that you just, your heart sinks and you're like, oh man, really? I have to deal with this shit? Like, so what is that faction that like makes your gut sink and you go, oh fuck me, like this again?
I think almost every time it's either, can I just have to choose one or can I choose two?
No, you go for it.
Because there's two ends of this for me. It's either.
I'm like topic arbiter, right? Where I'm like, yes. No, you can go mad. And why? And why is this
okay?
Reason?
So number one is probably Grey Knights, because I know every time I come up against Grey Knights, it's going to be a sweaty as fuck game where I'm like, oh, I've moved them, and they're like, oh, you've activated my trap card, and they miss away, and I'm just like, oh, I forgot, missed again. So that's one, which is annoying. And then the other one is just like something like a huge melee pressure list, something like, you know, loads of Orc boys or like CSM coming out of Rhinos, that sort of stuff. Because I play shooty Necrons, generally speaking. And then what they do is just jam their army down my throat. And I just go, oh, fuck. World Eater's another good example. Like, it's always a stress. What about you?
Did you see my face there? I was getting World Eaters flashback. So
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
like, this is the end. I'm just this like, is, up.
I infiltrated my death ring. What's wrong with me?
You settle down. You're on thin ice from that.
Shimmer like, down, boy. Shimmer down.
Shimmer down, boy. Shimmer down. So yeah, so combat army. Okay. I mean, that's fair enough. Do you not, so with us, just to finish off your thing there, because there's something to discuss. Do you not find, ironically coming from me and what happened with that, that the melee armies are a little bit predictable? I can totally understand Grey Knights, right?
Yeah.
Because that they are tricky fuckers, especially this edition. I think this edition more than any other previous
edition. Oh, yeah,
edition,
they are tricky.
But surely a melee army, you know exactly what they're doing, but even then do you still just go, oh, fucking hell, like, really?
I think,
imagine how a Tau player must feel.
I think I'm getting better at learning to deal with stuff like World Eaters. I think the danger with World Eaters is you tend to sit there and go, oh, fuck, I better backline my entire army because they can get on me turn one if they get advance and charge and they can auto six and all this sort of stuff. So you sort of, you know, when you're like a novice player, you shit your pants and you hide. But then you lose the game because you're shitting your pants hiding in the corner all game. So then you think, actually, the way to deal with them is to give them something, but not the most important stuff.
Ah, to like and lure that's them, the way lure to, them yeah. out. And then like,
because all they want to do is lick the stamp and fucking send it, basically. And and that's fine. But you need to give them something to send it into, but then you
see,
need
now,
to also
this I think is really important for players. Like, because we could have ended the topic there and gone like, okay, this is what, but like that's a great thing there of just like throwing them something, like giving them something to kind of thing. The last thing you want to do though is like chain it though. Where like you throw them something and then they fucking consolidate into something and you're like, ah, like you're just like freaking out.
Yeah,
and you can't like
you've got to keep 4 inches back at least, because then they can't get into, it's 4.1 inches technically, because then they can't consolidate into engagement range, which is what they want to do.
Sure. Fair enough.
What's your answer then? Come on.
So, I kind of agree with Grey Knights to some extent, although playing quite a tough army or like a low-ish model count army and I have access to infiltrators means that I'm not as bothered about Grey Knights as I probably should be. And the say if it wasn't, because I obviously did the Oxford GT where I was paired against a World Eaters player and I actually won that game because I learned from my previous train wreck of a game about how to deal with World Eaters. And I actually did something very similar to what you were saying naturally, which is to kind of try and tempt them out. And like it forced the World Eaters player to be very cagey with what they were doing. And then by then it's like you fucked over your entire like method of how you're going to win this game as a World Eaters player, right? And I agree, you don't kind of do that. You don't like hit the wall and not win on primaries because you're just going to lose. I think my most hated army in general in 40K is one that I also hate playing against because I hate Trixie elves in general. And for me, it's Drakari slash kind of Eldari.
Yeah.
I fucking hate those factions so much because similar to like the Grey Knights thing, they tend to have a bag of tricks. Because in all games that LV kind of armies exist, like they tend to be always incredibly brittle and rely on movement and tricks and shit like that, right? And I always stare down the Dark Eldar player and I'm like, how many fucking transports do you have?
Yeah. Like, it's there was always a point like, in 9th edition, right, where they just had like an... It felt like an inexhaustible supply of transports full of shit.
Dude, like you got to crack the shell to like get to the gooiness inside. Like, yeah, they're really like flimsy, but like you got to crack those transports first.
Yeah, you do.
And like that's a lot of effort. And like, you know, if you're running some sort of melee army, like good fucking luck with that. Like good luck chasing like transports running on all four corners and they're picking up secondaries. They're like, oh yeah, I mean, and you're just like fucking out and you feel like you're behind constantly.
Yeah.
And to some extent Eldar at the beginning of 10th, because that was just not fun. It was just really uninteractive and like, and obviously the moving there, like what was the stratagem where they could like move their they can't do that anymore, right?
With what's it called? I know the one you mean. It's something basically Eldar-y. When you moved, I think they could move back and it was just really annoying. It'll come back to me in a minute. But this is getting me reminiscing now, actually, about 9th edition Drakari, because I remember when that codex came out.
Fuck that.
And like, there was a load of people in our Discord who were playing them, and they kept like coming out and they were like, this is fucking ridiculous. This army's bullshit. It's broken. And I was like, guys, come on. I'm sure they're difficult, but they can't be that bad. I'm like, you know, it's probably because you just don't know how to play into them. And then my mate, who I'm really good mates with, Fred, he plays Drakari, and he came over and had a game together. And I just, straight after that game, I was like, this is fucking bullshit.
Yeah,
this is ridiculous.
I remember in 9th, I have distinct memories. There were two armies that were, to be fair, medium to very, in one case, a very high skill threshold army, that were just really badly balanced from the get. And that was Drakari and Admech.
Yeah.
And I remember like all through that season, and I think they came out relatively close together, but like the top of the list were just like Eldari Admech lists. And it's just like, fuck. And I remember that was awful. Although to be fair, I never had a bad moment playing Dark Angels in 9th. Like those were the days. Oh my God. I wish I had the skill set that I have now, like back then.
Yeah.
And the model range that I have. Oh my God, I would have loved it. I would have, like, get me off of my objectives, you fucking asshole. Like, just the best. It was just the best. It was
I
so
think it's Phantasm, fun. Actually, is the strike.
Phantasm, that's it.
That's the one.
I think it's if you get shot, isn't it, that you can move?
Yeah, something like that. It's really annoying, it's basically. Something. You just sort of waltz back. But they used to just be able to, like, auto you all the way through the wall with those giant Wraith Knights and stuff, and it was just bullshit at us.
I've got one more faction as well that I don't enjoy playing against.
I feel like it's about to be the same one that I've got coming in. Go on.
Oh.
Should we say
this
on
is
three?
Because of what? Yeah, okay.
One, two, three.
Tau. Orcs.
Oh! Fucking hate Tau.
Do you?
Yeah, so do you remember when you were playing that World Eaters game at the Oxford GT? That's the onslaught. Yeah. And I was like leaning over your shoulder, annoying you all game because you frontlined, you're infiltrating Unit of Deathwing, you remember?
Oh, did I?
Hasn't come up on the podcast yet.
I didn't know I did that. That's
so do you remember like my hubris? Because I was winding you up something chronic and you were really like having to keep it in the tin that game, I remember.
I was playing
Tau behind you and it was the sweatiest fucking game of my life because... I couldn't do anything. I couldn't reveal anything because he just was like a million crisis and then he'd just pop out and just deck anything he could see. And that's really hard. Like, I know they've changed a bit with their codex, but I still think they're pretty strong.
I can see that. They tend to have a high model count as well. Mm. And they tend to trade up really well.
It's those breacher teams.
They're harsh, man. They're actually quite harsh.
What were you going to say about orcs?
No. Just finish that very quickly. I get it with Tau. I think the thing is with Tau is you've got to play against a strong Tau player because a bad Tau player will just die. There's no getting around it. Like, they're not very tough. No. If you lose your core units, you're kind of fucked.
I think positioning is super key.
Yeah, and like
screen,
yeah, like block screenings. Yeah, yeah, look at you got it because my hands.
I can see you doing the hands. Yeah,
yeah, screening. Yes, I think screening is the best skill to learn as a Tau player. Like, if you don't know how to screen, you're going to play that army
really
badly. Orcs. I think it's a redemption thing for me right now because I got wrecked by orcs in the Oxford GT. Because do you know what I did? Do you know what I did?
Go on.
I deployed two Fafors.
Oh, that's not like you.
I got turn one charge again, and I was like, it's that annoying deployment where it's like the circle in the middle.
Oh, I know the one.
And you're so close, you're way closer than you think you are to your opponent, right? And I was just like, he ain't going to fucking turn one charge me. And of course he fucking turn one charge me.
Did you not
learn
from your previous...
Yeah, but I did. And then I beat the World Eaters player, and I was like, oh, Hawks will be fine.
You got all cock heavy, and you were like, I'm going in.
Their fucking t-shirt saves, it'd be fine.
Yeah, easy.
But I think that is purely a experience thing now that I've been there, done that. I think it's a personal demon of mine that I'll play against orcs again and hopefully be okay with it and adapt.
It's one of those things, isn't it? Like, I've had this with White
Scars. It's all a learning curve.
Yeah, I've had this with White Scars so many times where one of my mates who plays White Scars and he'll always go, don't forget, I can go really fast and I can advance and charge. And I'm like, yeah. And then I put everything way too close and he goes, I'm going first, I'm going to go really fast and advance and charge. And I'm like, boom. How did I forget? You literally just told me.
Well, I think it's one thing to be told it and then another to see it. And
yeah,
to like,
you have to make a mistake,
anticipate,
right?
Anticipate distance. Yeah, absolutely. I think this is it. And I think, just to go into a deeper subject, not to get all... Oh, this sounds so shady, but not to get all, like, Vanguard tactics about it. But, like... but, like, you've got to take ownership of that shit. Like,
yeah,
like,
you do.
Don't be butthurt about it. Don't be like, you know, oh, that's busted and... Blah, blah. Go, I fucked up. And, like, what can I do better next time is always the best approach to that.
This actually is a really interesting topic that we can just jam into this episode if you want, because I think it's something that I've had a lot of experience with, and I think a lot of people do, is that everyone has a journey with 40K, and part of that journey is getting better at the game, but the other part of that journey that I think is really important and goes hand in hand with it is actually just accepting bad dice, bad luck, you know, stuff like that, bad matchups, or whether or not you've got a slightly tricky opponent to deal with socially. And I think that that is a major growth point of 40K. And I think as you get better as a player, learning to deal with losses, learning to deal with completely shit dice. Sometimes they just go sideways. You'll just be rolling crap all game, and not take it on the ego, and you know, actually just rise above it, keep your cool, push forwards, do the best you can. And like, I know that a lot of people say, put yourself in a position where you can't fail it even with bad dice. Sometimes that's bad dice can real fuck you. You know,
it's impossible. It's impossible, in my opinion.
But you just got to learn to deal with it, right?
I mean, don't get me wrong, right? There are still players out there that consistently top eight all the time. And like, you know, there is some special sauce there. I'm not going to say that there isn't, right? But at the end of the day, it's a dice game. And, you know, there could be a hinge moment that just didn't go how you wanted it to, just due to some shitty rolling. But I think it cuts both ways, right? It's like, on one hand, it's being humble enough to go, how do I improve? But then on the other hand, it's also not allowing you to scapegoat the situation with bullshit. Does that make sense?
And
be bogged down mentally by going, oh, I'm really shit at the game, when it was just inevitably just bad dice rolling. So a really difficult line to walk. And like, yeah, it takes some doing. And I think, to be fair though, that's the same with a lot of gaming, I think, really. Yeah. Like the whole, like, and now that gaming is becoming so mainstream, and the fact that esports exists now, do you know what I mean? Like the headspace of it is really, you know, really important.
Definitely.
And I imagine that, you know, if you're on, I think it also is if you're doing really well in an event, like if you're 4-0 and you're like, oh my God, I could fucking win. And then you shit the bed at the last minute because of your anxiety.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I imagine that's also a thing, right? Like,
yeah.
And you know, there's so much. There's so much psychology involved in it, and 40K is such a complicated game, it's almost impossible at that level to win accidentally,
yeah,
or to get a guaranteed victory. You get preferential matchups,
yeah, for sure,
but like, you have to be on it all the time, which brings us, look at this segue, I'm really good at doing this
now.
I'm becoming a radio DJ now. How to remember mentally, with mental gymnastics, all of your rules interactions, all of your army rules, and kind of what your opponent's doing as well. How the fuck, how do you do it? Because I have a method for doing it, and it's not glamorous, but it works well for me.
Well, that is a really good question. I basically, you know, I read the rules, obviously, when they come out, and there's a lot. It's getting, like, biblical. A little bit at times.
Yeah,
I mean, you've got this giant document in front of you, and you're like, oh my Lord, like there's a lot of interactions and, you know, as you say, rule interactions, etc. And you look at this and you think, God, this is so complicated now, this game. Yeah. I know that they sort of simplified, not simple, and all this stuff.
Complex, not complicated.
yeah, exactly.
Love that. Made me fucking cackle. I was thinking about that for days afterwards. I was like, ha ha, got it right.
Yeah, it is, Dave. And I think that it's really difficult, especially with like certain armies that are really tricky, like Thousand Sons, where they can really boggle you if you don't know what you're up against. I think, like, for me personally, I just try and play enough to remember, especially my rules, and like just get enough reps in, get a bit of practice in, try and actually play the game, and like reps. I'm at the gym, the school of hard knocks for 40K.
I think if I was to look at a gym, I think I would have a heart attack. So
yeah, don't do that. We need you for the podcast. Otherwise, I'm just going to do it myself. And
I was like, oh no, not my bromance. It's like, no, fuck it, I need him.
I need you, Russ.
But no, that's going in the memory bank. Anyway, sorry.
That's a tough wank. So
that's a Sean Locke reference, isn't it?
Yeah.
Great reference.
So I think that it's got easier now that there's not 18 stratagems per detachment to remember. Like, we only have, what, six stratagems, which is definitely better. And you've only got a few enhancements. So I think that side of like compartmentalizing it is definitely better from GW, and that makes it easier for me to remember. And also on like a game-to-game front, your opponent to explain what their army does, because they can just go, these are my strats, this is my two and three enhancements, whatever it is, jobs are good. But yeah, it's not easy for me. I've notoriously got a crap memory.
Well, also, if you don't mind me saying that, you self-identify a little bit as being a bit neurodivergent, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a rampant ADHD, and that basically just destroys my short-term memory, which makes it tricky for me in a game setting sometimes. But I'm most of the time okay. I think it's stuff like rapid ingress is a big one. Mm. Those sort of rules really catch me out because...
Yeah, because they don't appear very often, but when they do, they're hugely significant. Oh.
Mate, like, if I remember to do it, it's great. But like, as you know, I go in the tank sometimes, and when I do, I'm sat there planning out, like, you know, my entire next turn perfectly down to the minor detail, and then my opponent goes
does
on
that,
the rapid
and
ingress
like, oh,
now,
shit.
And then I go, fuck, that's all gone wrong. So yeah, that sort of stuff catches me out. But yeah, what about you? What's your method? Tell me, because maybe I can learn from it.
Okay, well, no, I've got a weird brain, right? Where like. I have like hyper focus, so I tend to be crap at multitasking, but very, very good when I focus in on one thing that I do from like start to finish, which I've learned on a personal level means that I forget certain things in order because I'm so focused on one thing. So like, if I see that my opponent's moved into a certain area or that I'm like, I need to make a crucial play, I'm so hyper-focused on that play that I forget everything, including really stupid shit like triggers at the beginning of turns, abilities at the beginning of turns that you need to do and stuff like that in very specific phases or stratagems in very specific phases. And obviously at a tournament level, it's really, unless you're playing with a friend, and even then it's like... You can't retrospectively go back and go, hey, I kind of wanted to do this and this. But your opponent has full right to go like, actually, fuck you. And actually, on a personal level, I don't want to do that either because I'm not learning. I'm just like basically putting off developing as a human being. So what I do is I get a notepad. So I get an A4 notepad and I literally write out turn orderations of everything, when stratagems can trigger in various things. And as I start my turn, I don't know if this is even legal, I presume it is to like help you, is I just kind of go through my turn on the page. Yeah. And like, you know, I've got like oath in big letters at the top of the page, right? Yeah. Or like command, like, and I've got all of those key things. So it doesn't have to like live in there. Yeah. I can literally cross-reference that and go, ah, okay, cool. Like, I need to calm down and do things in this specific orderation and trigger everything correctly because it's so touchy in regards to, like, when phases occur. So, yeah, just the very act of, like, writing that out means that it actually goes in my brain better and actually, like, is a rep in its own sort of way, if that makes sense. So that's my whole shtick.
Makes total sense, mate. Yeah, I think I've seen one guy I played against once. He was playing Death Guard, and I think it was his first tournament ever. Bless him. And he sat down at the beginning of the game, and he whipped out an A3 laminated sheet with his entire army rules and everything on it. And I was like, "Fuck me!" It was. I was like, "Jesus!" He's like scrawling a map out on the table.
But there's been some games where I forgot to flip my fucking secondaries. And stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
it's stuff like picking up the Calidus Assassin, you know? It's just so
like
easy to forget.
Shit.
Yeah. And then you're suddenly halfway through the turn, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, well, this is it. Like, it's such, 40K is such a sensitive game in terms of like when things occur that you just can't afford to like not be on that.
I know.
Shit.
Because, like, you know, if you and I are having a game at a tournament or whatever, I think you and I are the sort of people who would allow take-backsies that won't affect the sort of course of the game. Like, let's say you forgot to pick up your Calidus Assassin and then suddenly remembered. I'd be like, just pick him up and pick her up or whatever and do it. But, like, sometimes it gets to a point in the game where it would actually be advantageous to suddenly
do that. You've gone
so
far through.
Yeah, you've got your secondaries, and now you realise
the psychology of this. Like, would I have reacted differently?
Yeah, exactly. And then you start feeling bad, and then it's like, I'm gaining an advantage here.
And also, like, I don't want to put my opponent in that, like, because I care about their experience as well, believe it or not.
Of course.
I don't want to put them in that difficult situation of, like, them having feel bad. Or it being a scorecard thing, where it's like, oh, I've got one take-backsie, you deserve a take-backsie.
Yeah.
Because it's just orcs. It's just like mega,
I think like
mega
obvious
orcs.
Stuff, you know, like you were obviously going to do this. Like let's say you put down a guy in the corner to do an action and then you just forget to announce that action is actually starting. But
that's
you did
fine.
It clearly. You know, that sort of stuff's fine. It's just when it gets to like two phases along and then you're like, oh no.
Yeah, but man, if you're like top four on stream, right?
It's a bit embarrassing, right?
Well, yeah, or your opponent has full right to go, actually, no, yeah. Fuck off. And
I've seen it go both ways on streams before. Like I was watching War Games Live, and I think I've seen a guy where he was just like, no, sorry, it's too far. You know, so many rules have gone past, which is fair. It's, you know, it's his call. But then equally, I've seen people go, all right, yeah, you do it. And then they've lost the game because of it or something, you know. It's tricky.
I like to think that I would always have the honor position of allowing it. But, if I ever get into that privileged situation where I'm top tables ever and... I don't know, like the fucking the competitiveness might come out and I might be like, actually, fuck that. I mean,
I think you're right there. Like, on the side of allowing takebacks that aren't, you know, obviously where your opponent's just sort of trying to gain an advantage. I think a lot of it depends on the opponent, right?
This is it. I think with my game with you, and I think if we, when we have more games in the future, I think that's just going to be it. But like, it is very dependent. Is extremely
100%. Like if your opponent's being tricky and then you know they're sort of being difficult to play against from a sort of social standpoint, and then and then they suddenly make a glaring mistake, you're gonna be like, well, you didn't give me any time.
Yeah, fuck you. Exactly. Yeah. Same with chess clocks as well and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
God, some people can be a nightmare on the chess clock.
Yeah, I mean,
like I've heard stories of people like banging the chess clock back every time. Like one of my mates, I don't run tryhard wargaming alone. Like I've got another couple of guys that run it with me, and one of them, Alex, he had this moment in one of his games where basically the guy was like clocking him every sort of dice he rolled or every turn he touched a model and all this sort of stuff. And I think that it was the guy's turn, and Alex coughed and he clocked him, and Alex was like, what are you doing? I'm just coughing, man. Like,
like seriously.
Look, they clocked him for coughing, and he was like, "Oh, I thought you were going to say you were doing something."
What a dickhead!
Yeah,
like, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I hardly ever touch wood, and I say this, and I will next time, run out of time ever because I play. Like,
I think these stories are also few and far between.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I run small model count armies, so I never have to worry about that.
Yeah, but just 10 Terminators.
I'm going to be the king of like blending topics, but obviously chess clocks are an item that you will possibly need at an event.
Oh, that was a wet blend.
Just wet blended it. Just the topic.
Slid it in there.
There you go. See, like I just arbiter of the topics. Like there we go. So this brings me on to the point. How the fuck do you survive your first tournament event, right? Like, what are you going to pack? What is your headspace going into it? Like, you know, it's spoiler alert, tournament is hard going, man. Like, by that the end of that first day when I get home, I am fucked. Like, I am so tired, I am exhausted, mentally drained. That, you know, you go swinging into your second day, and actually, it can be fine or whatever. But, like, how do you cope with tournament environments? What techniques do you use to get through it, per se?
Yes. I think this is a really interesting one. And there's another picture here that we'll put on the Instagram of me on day three of the Coventry Super Major. They do a 3-dayer for the UKTC one. And I was playing against Tyranids, and they had loads of indirect. And there was just a picture of me sat there looking like I'm wiped out. Like I've sat there with my sad pint.
And you just don't care, right? Like,
yeah, I'm just gone. I'm dead behind the eyes.
Yeah.
It does take a toll. Like you're right. You know, these when you're a casual 40K player, or you know, you're just getting into competitive or whatever for the first time, you think, you know, this will be all right. You know, it's only five games. But then you think about it,
it'll
like,
be fine. It's just five games of my favorite game.
But then it's 9 hours of Warhammer in one day, right?
It's a lot.
Plus,
it's a lot,
man. It's a lot of Warhammer. So I think that, like, you know, keep hydrated, as they say. I always bring a little tub of flapjack bites.
I saw that.
Those things. Those things are great.
Yeah.
Honestly, bit of energy, keep you going.
Well, I think so this comes down to some basic, because you'll be so fucking shocked at how many people don't look after themselves, right? Like, in general. And this is just me putting my daddy cap on, not in that way, but like, in the practical way. Sorry,
teach me, daddy.
Look the fuck after yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I take a big old bottle of water or squash, right?
That's the first thing that goes in.
Dude, you can't live off caffeinated beverages for 3 days. You're going to shit your soul out. You're going to be severely dehydrated. I mean, I say this, I am a particular fan, sponsor us, of Monster energy drink all time. I love that shit. No, I love that shit. And I will drink one or two of those on an event day, right? But in addition to plenty of fucking water that you must have. You've got to have water, right?
100%.
And decent food, which is potentially tricky because if you're out of town for an event and you don't know the area very well, or, you know, your first point of call is just going to be food that's shit for you, that, you know, the flapjack bites is a great one because, like, I can't even have fucking flapjacks on a 40k pod. But there we go. We live in a surreal world.
Bananas are also really good.
That was literally going to be my thing. Bananas. Honestly, I always take a banana. Like, I don't know what that's about, but just take a banana.
Also, talking about psychology in 40k, like, there's nothing going to wig your opponent out more than you slowly eating an entire banana in one day. Like, if you want to press an advantage, just maintain eye contact.
Is that like a Sigma move? It's just like smashing a banana, just smashing it, or just smashing it in your face, just like slowly smashing it. Well, you got dripping banana falling off. You got like how many wounds?
Yeah, no, just do the whole thing whole in one go. Wow. Just deep throat it all the way down. Just push it and then just carry on the game. That will wig anyone out.
Yeah, I mean, dude.
But no, bananas, seriously good.
Yeah,
water, really good.
Decent food, right? Like, whatever gives you that, like, thing, try to avoid sugary bumps as me with my fucking Monster. But, like...
Yeah, I mean, a Monster on, like, day two when you're going into your last round, they'll frizz you up a bit. That's fine, because you need it by that point.
I'm monstering the whole way. Don't drink fucking booze. I see so many people, like, drinking booze at events. I saw on the Oxford GT, like, people walking around with cans of Stella and shit. And I'm like, mate, what are you doing? Like,
do you know what the worst thing is? So every time I go to LGT, which is the London Grand Tournament that the UKTC
I want to go.
Come. I think I'm going to go. So if you can, that'd be awesome.
When is it this year?
I think it's like September, October time, usually.
It's going to be a bit early for me. But we'll see.
Whenever I go there, they have a bar. And every damn time I'll play someone and they'll go, hey man, my opponent will be like, can I buy you a pint? And I'm like too polite to say no. So I'll go, yeah, that's really kind of you, mate. I'll get you one back. And then I'm fucking 2 pints down in the middle of a game. I'm already like a complete moron playing this game. And then I'm sat there going, oh fuck, I've forgotten to pick up all my hyperphasing units. And so yeah, try not to drink.
I'll be real. I don't drink. So like
I know you don't drink. Yeah.
I mean, sorry, that's just like, that was an in joke there. But yeah, like, no, don't do it. Don't do it.
No.
Like it'll slow your brain down. It'll dehydrate you. And also, like, it's just bad sportsmanship.
I'd say if you're there just to enjoy yourself, play a few games of 40K, not trying to really win, but you also, you know, you can handle your drink.
Like, there's nothing worse than, like, an angry nerd that's been, like, necking
Don't get pissed. Jesus, like, a pint or, you know, a beer is not going to make you drunk. But, like, something like that's fine. But, don't be pissed playing 40K. I have had a pissed opponent once, actually, which wasn't much fun. But
that's not fun at all. That's really bad.
I mean, he lost, so it was fine.
But that's orcs, man. Like,
I did the banana trick on him.
Was it? Also, accessories that you need.
Yes.
This seems so obvious, and I'm so sorry for people that are like, decent tape measure. Don't borrow your opponent's fucking tape measure. Don't be that guy or girl. Like, it's awful, gender, no specific. Just don't fucking do it.
No.
Bring plenty of decent dice. Don't cheat.
Yeah.
Bring loaded dice, you fucking dickhead. Don't do that. Like you say, protractor. Protractor's really good. I must confess, I was actually joking. Well, oh, really?
Yeah.
What do you use? Are they saying that? Fuck you, dude. People use that, like,
really
3-inch like thing to help. I thought that's what you meant. I actually thought that's what you meant.
No, That's my little widget. So you can get them from StatCheck, do them and all that sort of stuff. I think that's where I got mine from.
We need a widget. That's what we need.
Yeah, it's like a 3-inch widget. It's got 3 inches on one side, 2 inches on the other, and an inch on one, and then half on the other. Yes, yeah, that's what it's called. I always go, I'm going to get out my 3-incher. You wait, baby.
Why did you go all summer, say?
I don't know, it just felt
right.
They're really good because then you can use those to measure coherency.
Yeah, that's really useful.
And you can get nine inch ones as well, which, who doesn't like a 9-inch?
I might get one of those because I'm deep striking for days.
Deep striking is really, that's really handy. And it's just good because then you can quickly like whip it around your bases to show your opponent where they can go to, and you can put dice down and stuff. So that's a definite good shout. I have a dice box is another thing. You don't need one, but...
Yeah, I am going to get a dice box.
They're useful. Just make sure it's got flat sides. Don't get one... You can get these little trays, which I think are meant to put desk tidy trays.
The problem is
they've got angled sides and dice just cock continuously.
Yeah, fuck that.
I see them all the time. No one wants a cock.
Decent bags.
In the middle of their game.
Decent bags. Like a decent messenger bag or backpack to put all your shit in. Of course, your codex or battle rules so that you can whip that out if they exist in the current edition.
Yeah. Back onto dice. Get like a big CP dice or two big CP dice that you can bang on the board.
Different color as well, so you remember to not roll it.
And wound marker dice. That's the other one.
Yeah, I actually
very handy. Or dials.
Wound markers that you then put the dice in and roll it down.
Those work too. Cool. But anything like that. So you can at least keep track of what's going on in the game. And then what else? Chess clocks.
Or an app on your phone. There's plenty of decent apps. What's that app that's for all the secondaries and all that business?
So that is the ITC Battles app, I think, unless it's been rebranded. I think it's...
You can also get a chess clock app.
It's called Tabletop Battles, I think.
Yeah, that's it. That'll do.
That's very, very good for keeping track of score. I use that all the time because it's just handy.
Phone charger. Sounds ridiculous. Phone charger.
Phone battery... Like one of those battery packs for your phones. Battery bank.
Spoiler, this is a lot of shit.
You're going to have a backpack. Stuff. You need like it. You're going mining.
Well, I've got my new bag of holding.
I'm jealous.
It's so good. So cool. And also very quickly, how do you transport your army? Actually, that might be a topic for another time, actually. Transporting your armies from point A to point B.
I have a man for that.
Jethro. Jethro carries my army.
I just kick my fingers at him and go, Jethro, bring my army.
Imagine the big dick baller move or big clip baller move when you like show up to a game and like, Jethro, pass me my army. You'd be opposite. You'd be like, what the fuck? What is...
This really reminds me of something that I really wanted to do. I'm going to do it at some point because I think it's hilarious. It's like when we were at a big UKTC event recently, I really wanted to get our team to basically all pretend they were bouncing for me, and I was going to walk into the hall like I own the fucking place and have all these guys like holding everyone back like, excuse me, come on, we're coming through. So I thought that'd be so funny.
That's very WWE, that's like very SmackDown-y.
Chess clocks, I didn't used to have one, and then I had a couple of bad experiences where it wasn't through any fault of my opponent being deliberate, but sometimes people just play slower than they realize, especially newer opponents, people who are new to the game, and even yourself. And I think that it's really good to have a chess clock just to keep yourself from going in the tank for too long.
I can see you, Russ,
eyeing me. But no, honestly, I use one every game now. It rarely comes up, but when it does, it's very good to be able to at least sort of go, do you know what? I've only played an hour of this 3 hours, and I kind of want to play another at least half an hour of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that. I totally understand that. That's fair. It's just, it's something you just need to get your head around and just appreciate that it's not your opponent being a dick. It's just...
The only other things I can think of are like rule books, codexes, cards.
That's what I said. Anything that can like help you remember rules.
A3 sheet of paper with all your army rules written on it. Make sure you laminate it.
Always. Laminate is the big dick ball move. that's basically it. I need to get one of those 9-inch deep strike things. Like, they sound really cool, actually. Like,
we they're good.
We need to get an In the Tank one sorted. That'd be cool.
Yeah, we should. Yeah. Get the merch on the go.
Dude, merch is the fucking way forward, bro. It's awesome. We need to do like a fake team jersey or something that's like, take the piss out of other team jerseys. Sorry, controversial opinion, and this will keep coming up. I find team jerseys to be the most cringy thing.
I am so sorry.
Being in your tribe, you know, you do you, bro. Like, congratulations. You belong to a subculture. Like, that's ace. Like, you do you. Fuck no. Absolutely. And they all look fucking terrible. And, like, you can see them at events and, like, they're just, like, spotted around an event hall. And you're like, for fuck's sake. Like,
I actually really like them because they... I'm going to controversial opinion this.
Because
when you're short like me, I'm sort of 5'7", 5'8", something like that. It's difficult for me to see where people are in a hall full of people sometimes.
Yeah,
and if I can spot my team shirts, I can go, oh, there's such and such. It makes it a lot easier for me.
I'm like this fucking.
I mean, you're easy
dude.
To spot because you've got this huge hair. Just like, oh, there's Russ.
I'm quite fat and like beefy and like.
I can see you on the way to the event with your hair coming out either window the side of the car.
I just hear like when I walk to events or like even if I'm down the street, I just go, rah! I'm like, where the fuck is that come from? Like, where did that come from? This is really funny.
The only thing you've got to be careful of is when you're walking in between tables, you don't just brush everyone's models off with your big mop.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, dude, the worst things have happened. I remember I got one of, like, my wife's Harlequins caught in my hair once when I was leaving over the table and stuff, which means that I now, like, tie it back sometimes for when I'm, like, getting really into, like, big games.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be, like, accused of cheating for, like, moving my opponent's models with my mop.
Yeah.
Just, like, drench it over the table. Just be like, go on then, move on to my hair. Anyway, bring this back. Dude, we went somewhere with that. There's no way I can wet blend this issue.
Let's just do it this way, ready?
Is there?
The top five paints you can't live without.
Is that it?
That's the wet blend.
Well, wet blend it, yeah. Because this is also like a general... Of course, it's focused on like tournament stuff as well, but like we're both really into our hobby side of the hobby, right? And painting's really important. Like, it's like half the fucking hobby, pretty much. Like, look, dude, what literally are the paints that you recommend to people or that you just love to use, that you always run out of or that you use for lots of things or whatever?
Do you know what? I had an awakening recently.
Ooh, now I'm curious. Oof.
And I tell you what, it has changed my life.
Yeah,
so... I was always an Abaddon Black man, right?
No, fuck that.
I hate Abaddon Black. That fucking sentence taken in the wrong context, or if you click that wrong, it's really bad.
I'm literally stealing stars from that. Oh my God.
Okay.
Fucking hell,
I am a man who likes to paint Abaddon Black.
Black man was specifically what you said.
I'm into rimming. God. Okay.
Me too. I love to rim.
So I rim my bases every time in black because
I think
it makes them look sexy.
Fuck you, brown rimmers.
I can't get brown rimmers.
Fuck you, brown rimmers.
Russ, we're going to get cancelled on episode 2. Anyway, I always used to just do a little bit of watered down Abaddon Black around the rim, right?
Yeah.
And now I have found the contrast paint of all contrast paints, and it is called Black Legion, and it is basically just watered down Abaddon Black,
nice.
And it goes on so well on everything.
Nice.
So that
are
is
we gonna do?
My
are we gonna do one
paint.
A piece? We,
yeah, yeah, you go
piece?
Now. You go.
Just to mention your black rimming, that's awesome. I'm gonna have to try a bit of Abaddon Black actually, but I like a hard black rim, so I tend to use something more substantial. So I use. Army painter black.
Okay, yeah.
And then rim it with that, just because I want it to just cover really well.
Sure.
And Abaddon Black, I always find it's like quite sticky, like afterwards.
Yeah, that's why I like this contrast
paint. Leaves like fingerprints and shit, and I'm like touching it. And I'm like, ugh! Like I want to like finish it with like that. No, I don't want a fucking fingerprints on my rim. Thank you. It's not happening.
Like, yeah, no.
Get your fingers off my rim. Fucking hell. Sorry, everybody.
So, Army Painter Black for you.
Yes, but that's not on my list. Sorry. That's
All right.
But my first choice.
Yeah.
Apothecary White.
Oof. Okay.
So, contrast paints in general.
Yeah.
I'm not a massive contrast person. There's only like three or four that I will religiously use. And I don't tend to ever use them for big surfaces or like big things. But white is always a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, because it's not
easy. Because when you're dealing with like painting white in general, there's so many methods to do it. But it tends to be that you do everything like backwards to what you would normally do with regular base coating, where like normal base coating, you form a base coat, you wash it, and then you build up layers. With apothecary, sorry, with white in general, it seems like you go backwards, where you like have your brightest layer, and then you recess everything, right?
Yeah.
And apothecary white just does that amazingly well. I didn't understand how useful such a mundane colour. It's not technically white. It's kind of like an off-grey kind of colour.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And you whack that over something bright white. So I love it for like any white imperial eagle chest things on Space Marines and
it
stuff.
It just gives that little shadow.
Absolutely.
And just accents the white, right?
Absolutely.
What do you normally put it over as your base white?
That's a really interesting thing, right? If I want to actually highlight over it, I use like a greyer colour.
Yeah.
So like my apothecaries and stuff like that. And then I go up higher. So I go up with like, it's not Corvus Back, but it's like the white, what is it called? It's not White Scar White, but it's the white in between that. It's like Corax White or something. Like,
yeah, I think that's right.
And then I have my final spot white on top of that. If it's just I want to go backwards, then the brightest white I can do, and then I put that on, and it's just off tints.
It's good stuff. Magic in a bottle.
Mate, if anyone's not tried apothecary white and they need to do a lot of white painting, white scars, whatever, like it works brilliantly. It works really, really well. What's your second?
So I really like Stormhost Silver, and the reason I like it is because whenever I do my metals, I have a particular scheme where basically I start off with like it's dark aluminium, I think it is. Dark aluminium, which is a metal color, Vallejo acrylic. And that stuff's basically, I think it's like an air color or something, but I just paint it on. And then what you can do is you basically, you can sort of wash it down and then dry brush it up with Stormhost Silver. And it just looks so nice when you do that. Like it's just dry brushed. It's really good. It's a lovely little highlight on metal. So that's what I use a lot.
Stormhost is amazing, actually.
It's almost white.
I'm a fancy pants motherfucker, and I use the colour match alternative for two thin coats, which is called Mithril Blade.
Yeah.
But it's basically the same. But like, you need that highlight, crispy, silvery thing to go over stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I do like it. That's cool. I would keep on a metallic theme. My favorite metallic that I'll die on the hill for, and I have tried alternatives and they don't match the OG Citadel one, is Balthazar Gold.
Oh, that is a good gold.
It's technically like a copper.
Yeah.
Like, it's technically like a coppery bronze colour, actually. It's not really a gold. Like
it's sort of like reddy, isn't it? It's got a bit of red to it, right?
So, like, I made an executive decision with my Dark Angels to not do the pauldron crispiness or the metallics on the thing with silver. Because it looks better on the green, like, as a sort of foresty sort of scheme to do the bronze with the green.
Yeah.
So I use that for so much of my metallics in my army and Death Guard as well. Use it loads. Honestly, just whacking that on and putting some agrax over the top of it just looks so good so quickly.
Yeah.
And I use it way more than I probably should for a lot of projects that I work on. It almost is like, how can I incorporate Balthazar Gold in it? Not should I? Because I just love using it. It's got great coverage. Yeah, it's wicked. Balthazar Gold is by far my favourite metallic.
Yeah, I mean, in the name of time, should we just do one more and then
stop there? Yeah, of course. Yeah,
so I think for me, this is a bit more general, but it basically is contrast paints over metallics. This is one thing that I love at the minute. And I do this for my Necrons and for metals and stuff. For my Necrons specifically, I use Basilicanum Grey over the gold and then re-dry brush the same gold. Yep. But it just gives you great lowlights. And the other one is it Gilliman's Flesh, that sort of stuff?
Yeah.
So you can put that over metals and it just changes them into a copper.
Gilliman's Flesh looks so cool.
Yeah.
Especially over gold. Copper. Really nice. Oh, yeah. It looks brilliant.
So I think that's for me, like, that's a big game changer because you can really play around with them and do a lot.
Okay, cool. Nice. And for me, as a Dark Angels player, I've got two base cult colours. I'll be really quick with these two. One is the truly authentic, closest colour that I've ever found to OG Dark Angels green from Citadel, which is not Caliban green, which bums me out massively, is Two Thin Coats' Werven green.
Okay.
Which looks a lot like old school Dark Angels green because it's got that slight bluish kind of hue to it and it covers really well. So I use that for all my dark green stuff and then highlight from there. And then equally, I go through so much of this paint. Can you guess what this paint is? I go through so much of this fucking paint.
I know it's a paint that you've got a boner for.
Yeah, well done. Very good. It's Morgast Bone. I have gone through six pots of Morgast Bone. I used to be a Xandru Dust boy, but it's just too dark. But Morgast, hell fucking yeah. That is the best.
You now have an idea of how many Terminators Russ has painted.
A lot. I think I counted the other day, I have something like 63 Terminators.
It's not often that you go through an entire pot of paint, right?
No, but I have. And a lot of my vehicles too. A lot of my vehicles too. So like my Land Raiders, some of my Dreads, my Gladiator, that's all like Deathwingy. Yeah, six pots, man. And I use it for like skeletons and stuff, like for Sigmar and stuff. The game we don't talk about. But it's just I love Morgast. It covers really well. It looks great. It's way better than Xandru Dust. Use Morgast.
Yeah, perfect.
So last topic, because we've got to have something lorey thrown in there for controversy. I'm waiting for all of the Raven Guard players to like lynch me from my last episode. But there we go. So we'll choose one of each quickly. What is the coolest or most annoying lore moment for you in the entirety of like Black Library lore / in general? Like, is there one thing that made you go like, oh my God, equally going like, fuck me, like, no, like, go on, mate. Is there anything?
I'll start with the most annoying.
Go.
The most annoying was the retcon that they did on the wolves that followed Magnus through the portal, and they all sort of like became lost. And because I did some lore shorts.
I have no idea what we're referring to here.
I did some lore shorts a little while ago. The first one I did was basically talking about these guys that followed Magnus through into the Immaterium.
During Prospero?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that basically they retconned it slightly, or that it's been changed in a more sort of up-to-date book. And I didn't know that at the time when I was doing my research. And I made this little short on it and everyone was like, wrong. So
I think you're fine. Is that a fucking phrase? Yeah. I think you're fine. That's not correct.
That's the one that annoyed me because I'm an idiot and didn't read the newest book. But what about you? What's your most annoying one?
Anything to do with Abaddon or Abaddon. particular, him killing my homeboy Sigismund.
And
the plot armor of Abaddon, right?
Where Abaddon has thick plot armor.
Fuck that shit. Like, no. Like, get fucked. And after rereading the Horus Heresy and stuff, you look at like early Horus and you're like, yeah, Abaddon's quite cool. And then in the modern era, like the retcon, well, not really retcon, but I suppose evolution of the Black Crusades, where to make the Black Crusades actually seem like a threat, and during the fall of Cadia and stuff, it was actually like, actually, he didn't fail in those Black Crusades. He was like setting them all up to be like a very particular thing. And I'm like, fuck off. He just got nailed by everybody. Like, don't fucking do that. And this to me highlights the death of Sigismund, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm not Imperial Fist, Black Templar guy, but one of my favorite characters in the whole of the lore is Sigismund, right? Because fucking, what a bad man. What
he
a
is a bad lad,
bad
isn't he?
Bad man, right?
Yeah.
And, like, in his prime, he was, like, taking heads. Like, he tried to fucking take on Fulgrim, and he hurt, like, Fulgrim during the Siege of Terror. And Fulgrim's like, what the fuck is this? Like, this little guy is, like, coming at me. He's, like, stabbing him and, like, making him bleed. And Fulgrim's like, fuck off. Like, who are you? Like, what is going on? And, like, you know, the fact that he is the emperor, the first ever Emperor's Champion, took so many heads, man. He, like,
so
fucked
cool.
up Eidolon. He fucked up Khan. Like, you know, these are all, like, big fucking dudes, and he just wrecked their face. And then died because of plot armor. Because I don't know if, do you know how Sigismund died, So, like, he fought Abaddon.
Yeah.
On, like, his flagship or whatever. And, like, kind of in his head was like, right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to eradicate Abaddon from, like, history by sacrificing myself in the process. I'm going to, like, fucking stab him, like, through the chest with the black sword or whatever. Fuck him up. I'll die in return, but at least Abaddon's removed from him. Fuck no. Plot armor bullshit. He, like, fucking stabs Abaddon and fucks him up, and Abaddon's like, fuck you, bitch, and just kills him. And, like, due to the being chosen of chaos or some shit, like, survived it. And you're like, get fucked, dude. Like, I mean, the only cool thing that Abaddon did then was, like, send his gear back to the Imperium out of respect, which kind of feels like a weird thing for Abaddon to do that far gone. But do you know what I mean? Like Abaddon is just a dick. Like there's so many plot armor thing, and the fact that he always seems to know exactly what's going on, and fuck Abaddon. Like, I like his model, ironically, but
no, he's got a cool model.
As a character, I find him so shit. Like, I just don't like him, and the fact that he killed Sigismund.
I'm gonna say my coolest one, and this is from The Infinite and the Divine, which if
great
you haven't
book.
Read it,
I haven't
is
read it,
amazing.
But I know that it's a great book.
It's so good, and I'm loath to say the cool bit now because I don't want to spoil.
No, do it.
Basically, so spoilers. For those who haven't read it, but basically there's a bit in, so you've got this huge sort of rivalry between Traz in the Infinite and Orok in the Divine, and they basically have to work together in this book, and they just keep sort of making, you know, professional jibes at each other, or not, you know, very under the sort of table jibes at each other. And there's this
such
one bit
Necron
where,
story this.
Yeah, it is. And there's this one bit where Orokin's basically meditating in like a cave on this planet, trying to figure out where this sort of signal's coming from. And he's there for literally like thousands of years or something, or hundreds of years, because obviously time flows differently for Necrons anyway, because they're immortal functionally. And Trazin sneaks a gene stealer into the caves to try and fuck up Orokin. And he has this big old fight with this gene stealer patriarch.
Gene
stealer,
I choose you.
yeah, literally. And he gets away with it, right? And then they're like thousands of years later, they come back to this planet and they're like there doing some big show in the city. And then there's a full-on cult uprising in the city at that point, and Transon's like, oh fuck, I left the bloody gene stealer here and it's taken over the whole planet. It's like this moment where they're like, whoops, that's my fault.
That's really that kind of really ties good. Into me perfect with what I affectionately refer to as Necron whimsy.
Yeah, I love the whimsy.
Where they're just so old and so fucked in the head, and they're just like, let's just do weird fucking shit.
They're like two old men that have got like bitter rivalry between them, and they're like, just like, fuck you, and he like knocks his stick out.
Like
he's like,
it's like Tesla versus Edison or something. Do you know what I mean? It's like these two old fucks like just like one-upping each other all the time.
Yeah, it's great.
Bless you.
What's your coolest moment?
So a lot of people would expect me to do a Dark Angels one, and very quickly my this is just me being selfish and taking up too much time. But obviously when the lion returns back to the Imperium and who's the chapter master of the Blood Angels again? Everyone loves him. Dante. Like, bows to the lion, and that gave me a chub. But I don't think it was genuinely like the coolest like moment. For me, such a weird choice. First and only, first Gaunt's Ghost book. You read any Gaunt's Ghost?
I have been going through them actually recently.
Right.
Yeah, I'm on the second one now, I think.
Fair. Mine goes right back to the source of Gaunt's Ghost, which was the most cinematic thing. And in my brain, I was like, this would be the coolest fucking movie scene ever. And it comes right at the beginning of First and Only, and it's when they're in the trenches and, like, the ghosts have been, like, stationed on this world to fight like these like this chaos insurgency or whatever of cultists and shit. And they're just getting bombed to shit, and you get this really, it's Dan Abnett being Dan Abnett, this really awesome, shitty look, almost like a World War I-y trench and like the Tanith, like, and then it sets the scene about like how stealthy they are and how capable they are and stuff, and like they're in the trenches and stuff. And Gaunt realizing that he's been played by like the higher ups and that they're gonna get fucking bombed, because he can hear or he's been told from someone that I can't remember the exact plot detail, but like the Imperial bombardment is going to like creep up and like hit their lines. And he's come up with this genius idea that instead of just getting bombed by his own troops, he's just going to fucking suicide charge them like on the front line. And like, there's this awesome scene where he like from the trench, like grabs his chainsaw like out of his bunker, and like Michael or whatever is behind him, and he revs it, and he's like on the fucking, and he's like, come on, like, I can't remember the exact speech, but it's like, for the Emperor, for Tanith, or whatever, and he, like, and it's so World War, evocative of, like, World War One going over the top thing, right? And it seems so mundane, but it's just so awesome. And I could just imagine that on, like, a sort of Amazon show, just being so awesome and iconic shot.
Right, they've got so much to do with these Amazon shows if they do well with them. I hope they do.
So potentially a subject for next episode is like, how do we feel about Warhammer potentially being mainstream and like walking around with like normies wearing like,
I thought you were going to say like loads of bitches.
No, fucking what? We're both married with kids, bro. But like fucking hell. But I mean, yeah. But like, do you know what I mean? Like a normie walking around with a Space Wolf t-shirt on, and how weird, like the Game of Thronesy thing. But
it's
like,
so weird, yeah.
We're going to talk about that like potentially next time. But like, essentially cinematic scenes that in my brain I'm like, oh yeah, that'd be awesome.
There are some really cool moments from many of the books that are really like that, and I love them. I've read quite a few of the Black Library books now, and listened to many of them as well on Audible. So
Audible's the best place for that shit.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, when you're driving about, and I do a lot of driving, so, you know, get one of them on in the background. Yeah, love it.
Absolutely.
Good stuff. Well,
right,
I think that about wraps
up.
We
did it! We did it! That's episode 2!
Yeah. Amazing.
Loving this.
We're getting through it.
This is so much fun. Are you having fun?
It's great. I mean, I just love doing it. I just love getting the opportunity to hang out every week and just chat a load of shit about 40K.
Well, yeah, it's literally an example of two mates just kind of hanging out.
Literally. So we've got some new socials. So we are basically, we've got a YouTube channel which hasn't had the first episode uploaded, but it will do soon, and this episode when it goes live as well. So you can find us basically on YouTube and I think Instagram now, as well as the RSS feed, so like on things like Spotify and all that sort of stuff. We should be up on all of that now, and we are In the Tank 40K is our Monica.
Because there's another In the Tank podcast that I didn't realize that was like a political one, and I was like, oh, balls.
Well, I just wanted to call it In the Tank 40K so that people knew that we were actually a 40K podcast more than anything, because In the Tank could be anything.
Good keyword.
Yeah, no, it is.
So actually,
yeah, if you want to check anything out on there, that's where you can find what our bits and pieces. And then I think I am EddieS40K on Instagram, and you are Count Ruscula Miniatures?
Count Ruscula Minis.
Okay, almost. Count Ruskin and Minis. So, anything else that you wanted to discuss?
Just thank you for your presence. That was really fun, as always.
Yeah.
And, let us know about your awesome tournament experiences or not. And, like, what you would do to survive your first tournaments.
Yeah, and let us know also, like, coolest moments, because we're always up for... It actually gets, we'll find out some more books we haven't read.
Any community feedback whatsoever is really good for us, because obviously it perpetuates stuff. But also, eventually, I would love to do a Q&A episode.
Oh, that'd be really cool, yeah.
Like,
so,
in the future, like, it's just, like, community questions asked us, and us being talking heads for an episode.
That'd be great fun.
Because as master of topics... like to be, like, given a swerveball thing to, like, be like...
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully this week's audio should have been a little bit better, especially on Russ's end, because we had some issues last week. And then next week, hopefully, we'll be up and running with some video as well, which would be great. So
you get to see
stay tuned.
My ugly mug and your Adonis-y features.
Sure. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, guys, and see you in the next one.
Peace!